Well, my position was working as a technician in the computer area, and my job during Apollo 11 was to make sure that all the computer systems were running. There were three computers during Apollo 11 time. There was a command computer and a telemetry computer and a 1218 computer, which was for antenna positioning and driving the antenna in an emergency if it lost auto track. So my job was to both maintain and operate the computer complex.
So what did the command computer do?
Well, the command computer processed commands which were sent from mission control. These were real-time commands which did things in the spacecraft, turned things on and off, particularly things that the astronauts didn't have to bother about, like recording events, playing back the recorder. All this was done without having to bother the astronauts for turning it on and off. The second type of command was called a load command, which was a large amount of digital data which was sent to the onboard computer. And usually that sort of data was to update the star navigation for them to be able to look through their base sextant and identify stars that appeared, or they could request the onboard computer to position the spacecraft so that it would allow the sextant to look at the particular star they were asking. So every time there was any manoeuvring on the spacecraft or anything like that, they always were updating the star chart within the computer for navigation. So they were the two main sort of things that the command computer did. And it also had a few commands that affected things on the station as well. But yes, so that's the main thing.
And it would have done things like swapping the antennas during barbecue mode?
Yes, that's true. I forgot about that. Yes, it switched the omnidirectional antennas. There were four of them, sets of them round the spacecraft sides. And as the spacecraft rolled, and they called it, yes, the barbecue mode, where it evenly distributed the heat from the sun around the spacecraft. They didn't want to bother the astronauts with switching those antennas around as it rotated. So commands came from a person in mission control was called RTC, which is real-time command, and he was in charge of sending all those single-function commands. It was more critical during Apollo 13, and I imagine if we talk to Alan Foster, he'll tell us how difficult it was keeping a lock on the signal as it kept on fading, and eventually I think it was him that determined the fact that the spacecraft was tumbling by not having the omni-antennas switching. Well, the second computer was a telemetry computer, and it processed all the engineering data and parameters that were coming down from the spacecraft. And of course, the way I usually explain it is that the spacecraft had a dashboard in there with about 200 switches and knobs and buttons and indicators on it, which the astronauts were not able to look at all of those things all the time. So a lot of those measurements came down on the telemetry stream. And of course, there was probably about 10 times more data came down from the spacecraft than we were able to transmit back to Houston Mission Control because of the restrictions on the data lines going around the world. So our telemetry computer had various formats where it would send engineering parameters that were fast moving. It would send them at a higher data rate, whereas things like a battery voltage or a pressure that was fairly static, it would only send those every sort of 5 or 10 seconds. So the telemetry computer had all its formats, and they were switched by a person in mission control called TIC, T-I-C, that's the telemetry instrumentation coordinator. And yes, his primary concern was getting the right engineering measurements to the appropriate flight controllers and support teams, and that these formats changed dramatically as the different phases of the mission and the flight plan were moving along, particularly if the spacecraft was doing a manoeuvre or a an ignition of the engine, then they'd be looking at different parameters to what they would be looking at as if it was in coast mode and just rotating on this barbecue roll. There's a connection between the command computer and the telemetry computer. When a real-time command was sent to the spacecraft would respond, and in the telemetry stream you would see the effect of whatever the command was. But there could have been occasions where the spacecraft did not receive the command. And in order to determine whether it was a ground problem or a spacecraft problem, the command computer always sent a command acceptance pulse across the intercomputer channel between the command computer and the telemetry computer, and that acceptance pulse went back to RTC in Houston, and he would see that the actual command has left the tracking station antenna. So that gave him confidence that his command was getting out, or whether it was or it wasn't, and that sort of was a bridge in the loop, so to speak.
People talk about how primitive the computers were, but really there was a lot of very clever software and a lot of engineering went into what was done.
Oh, good heavens, yes. Yes, looking at the data pouring in from the telemetry processors into the telemetry computer, there was these just huge streams of data, and then the bottleneck was the lines going off the station and via the Pacific and Atlantic cables, which had limitations. So it just shows you how far we've come in being able to handle those huge volumes of data. Of course, everybody now talks about broadband, but when you think about broadband was what we were getting down from the spacecraft, and the bandwidth limitations on the international communication circuits restricted the amount of data we could send. So, yes, and the computers that we used at the tracking station, of course, they were the size of, twice the size of your domestic household refrigerator, and they were so big, and they weighed, each computer weighed about a ton and a bit, and had about 3,500 printed circuit boards inside each computer. So when we look at our PC today, it will do the whole job as a desktop computer.
And even the tape drives were gigantic, weren't they?
Oh, yes. There were four tape drives on each computer. And I think we had a row of about, 12, I think it might have been 12 tape units all in a row. And they're always very impressive, they were in those days, because that was the only thing that moved in the computer area when the tapes went round. That was the only thing that told you anything was happening. And, of course, film crews and news media and all that, they loved anything that moved, and they wanted to always see the tapes moving around. So there were times when we had written programs that made the tapes go around, which we'd always run if they wanted to film them. So it's anything that moves, that's what they wanted. Well, the APP, as you mentioned, was cool. That was the antenna position programmer, and that was up in the area where the servo operators sat and looked out the window at the antenna, and they had all the controls for the antenna movement there. Now, our antenna computer down in the computer room, it took positions, 29 points it usually did, 29 points across the sky, and then it processed this 29 points into a smooth track from horizon to horizon. And that computer that produced that, it could either have been a tape, or the antenna position programmer could drive the computer if they lost auto track or lost the spacecraft signal at any time. They could switch back to the predicted track that the spacecraft should be on. So the antenna position programmer would make the antenna hurry up and catch up with the spacecraft if the auto track function was lost. So that was another computer that we had to well, that I had to look after down in the computer area too. And it was a smaller one than the command and telemetry computers.
The 29-point predict, so that was 29 discrete points along the track, and then the computer filled in the, between the
that's
dots.
That's right. It filled, that's a good way of putting it, Colin. It filled in the dots so that the antenna could be, it, if you looked at it carefully, it was stepping about every second it would jump into a new position. And that kept the antenna moving along the predicted track. So the 29-point message was very important because it governed, you know, where they were going to position the antenna. If we hadn't, if we were waiting for the spacecraft to appear over the horizon, then Paul Mullen up in the servo area would be waiting to find out where he's got to position the antenna on the edge of the ridge to the east where the moon was going to rise or the spacecraft was going to appear if it was in low Earth orbit. And usually that's where the spacecraft appeared right at the time at that exact position. As the second ticked by, we'd find the spacecraft was there.
The accuracy was amazing, wasn't it?
It was absolutely incredible, yes. Yes, precision.
You listened to the LOS on the first orbit on Apollo 8.
Oh, yes.
Right on time.
It was a spot on, yes. Yes. Well, I think there was a case of when they did the any of the rocket burns behind the moon, the spacecraft was either going to come out in one of two places. It either had achieved lunar orbit or it hadn't. And depending on which spot it came out from the behind the moon, told us immediately.
And also the time, too.
And the timing, yes. Yes, as always. I forget the exact figures on the time, but I'm sure the USB guys will be able to tell you that.